Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to what show is this, Alden?
It is The Grave Hour, only on riotradio.ca and all of our other affiliations.
Heck yes. And as promised, we're talking about sunken ships. We did really creepy disappearances about a week or so ago, and I cannot remember the name of the ship, but we brought one up. And both me and Eldon connected on the fact that the idea of drowning and just disappearing in general sounded really terrible. Mm-hmm. So obviously it only makes sense that we talk about the subject and traumatize ourselves more than we already are.
Well, exactly. I mean, who doesn't like drowning at sea or even starvation at sea? So I'm excited to talk about this because, again, as a kid, I was terrified of death. I think that's I think everyone in their life at least has that one moment where you're like, wow, I'm going to die one day. And then it's like existential dread. And then you're like, who cares? Whatever, I'll live my life. And young Eldon was like terrified of it.
So was I. I actually wrote an entire article about death in, I think, my final year of college, where I talked about exactly that, being totally afraid of death and then being obsessively fascinated with it as an adult.
As a kid, I was always afraid of, like, getting hit by a bus or, you know, wild dogs attacking me. Like, it was things that would never happen in, like, Ontario. Well, being hit by a bus, maybe. But, like, I'd be in my house and be like, there could be a bear outside right now and just kill me. Like, it was ridiculous.
Honestly, relatable.
Yeah. So, with that, as a kid, I was terrified of boats because they were always so tippy. My grandfather's boat, who is now my brother's boat, was super, like, it's not very sturdy. So it's very scary getting in it, but like I love kayaking. I can go kayaking for like 5 hours a day and not be worried about tipping over because I can swim. But in this boat, I'm like, oh God, I'm going over.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So with that, I think let's start talking about these ships and get my heart racing.
Okay. So I believe I touched on this again in the last podcast about the origin story that inspired the book Moby Dick. And how the real life events were actually a lot worse than what the book was actually about. So I'm going to get right into it, but really quickly, I just want to point out the source that I'm using. I am on SmithsonianMag.com, and the author that I am borrowing this material from is named Gilbert King, and this was posted March 1st, 2013, so she's a little old. But basically, what inspired the book was a ship known as the Essex. It was a whaling ship that was based out of Nantucket. And the novelist's name was Herman Melville, and he actually went to meet Captain George Poland Jr., who was only 29 years old when he was actually captaining the Wessex, and it sunk. So he actually went there, basically just did a whole bunch of touristy stuff, and on his final day, he got to meet the captain, who was then around 60 years old, and he was literally a village night watchman, because tragically enough, after the Essex went down, spoiler alert, he survived. He would go on to captain another ship called the Two Brothers, but that ship also wrecked and went down after him captaining it for only 2 years. So no one wanted to hire him as a captain after that. So he would spend his remaining years on land as the village's night watchman.
I mean, okay, I understand that. If I was a captain of a ship and I sunk two ships back to back, I wouldn't be too upset if someone was like, nah, man, you're not going to be able to captain my ship. As a crewman, I would be very distraught to be like see, you know, JP Jr. walk up onto the dock and he's like, or I guess onto the bridge, and he's like, yep, we're gonna set sail, folks. I'd be going overboard.
Yeah, exactly.
Give me a dinghy, I'm out.
So the trouble for the Essex began, as Melville knew, on August 14th, 1819, just 2 days after it left Nantucket on a whaling voyage that was supposed to last 2.5 years.
Okay.
The 87-foot-long ship was hit by a squall, as I mentioned before, that destroyed its topgallant sail and nearly sank the entire ship. Mm-hmm. But Poland decided that he was going to continue, making it to Cape Horn 5 weeks later. But the 20-man crew found the waters off South America nearly completely fished to extinction. So they decided to sail for distant whaling grounds in the South Pacific, far from any shores. So we're off to an excellent start.
Yeah, they get to the fishing grounds. No one's there.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Okay, so far so good. I'm liking this.
Yep. So basically, they had to restock, obviously. So the Essex anchored at Charles Island in the Galapagos, where the crew collected 6,100-pound tortoises that they would go on to basically use as rations.
Oh,
and then tortoises. Some genius, as a prank, he was one of the crew members, decided to set a small fire in the dry season, which quickly spread on this island.
Nice.
Pollard's men barely escaped having to literally run through flames. And a day after they set sail, they could still see smoke burning from the island. I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, like, what kind of idiot? First of all, it's an island. What's the point of starting a fire?
It was a prank, bro.
Oh, it was a prank. Yeah, I burnt down a Galapagos island. There goes all the tortoises.
Yep. Oh, not just the tortoises, though. Also, the Florina mockingbird was basically driven to extinction after prank. And obviously, Captain Pollard was furious and vowed vengeance on whoever set the fire, but I believe that they never found out which of the crew members actually did it. So, well,
This is a great voyage so far.
Yeah,
this
it's going great.
Yeah, mini extinction event, squalls. No whales. It's going so... I'm rooting for the ship so far.
Yep. So now we're getting into where it really gets just even worse. So by November of 1820, after months of a prosperous voyage and thousands of miles from the nearest land, whaleboats from the Essex had harpooned whales that dragged them out towards the horizon in what the crew called Nantucket sleigh rides. And a gentleman named Owen Chase, who was the 23-year-old first mate, had stayed aboard the Essex to make repairs while Pollard went whaling. It was Chase who spotted a very big whale, 85 feet in length, he estimated, lying quietly in the distance, its head facing the ship. Then, after two or three spouts, the giant made straight for the Essex, quote, coming down for us at great celerity. Chase would recall at about 3 knots. I don't know what that means, just full disclaimer.
Boat speed.
Yeah, so he claims that the whale smashed head-on into the ship with such an appalling and tremendous jar as nearly threw all of us on our faces.
For argument's sake, let's say that this vengeful whale was watching them harpoon his friends and family and decided that he's a big boy, he can take down the ship.
Yeah.
I'm all on the side of the whale. Like, whaling is pretty barbaric, so I'm more than okay with the sperm whale just ramming the ship and putting it in its place.
Yeah. So I'm going to paraphrase through some of this because it is very long and it does get very graphic at certain points.
Okay.
But long story short, the crew had to basically lower their whaling boats and try to pile on as many supplies as they could because the boat was ready to capsize. And again, long story short, it did. Captain Pollard tried to come up with a plan basically after all of this happened because they were separated, 3 boats with 20 men. And they calculated that the closest land was the Marquis Islands and the Society Islands, and Pollard wanted to set off for them. But again, there was a genius aboard. In one of the most ironic decisions ever made in nautical history, Chase and the crew convinced him that those islands were peopled with cannibals, and the crew's best chance for survival would be to sail south. The reason why this is extremely ironic is because these people would basically be lost at sea without proper food, sleep, and water for 92 days, which would result in people dying, some from convulsions, possibly by consuming seawater unintentionally. Or I know that much of their rations were actually soaked in seawater because they did bring things like bread, but they're out at sea, they got soaked, and you can get very sick, as I'm sure you know, by, you know, drinking seawater.
Were there actually ever any cannibals on these islands?
No.
You're also like, it's 1820s. Mm-hmm. You have guns, maybe. Mm-hmm. You have swords. Just go to the islands.
Yeah, that's what they should have done. And at some point in the journey, they actually did stop at a deserted island. I can't quite remember where, as I said. I'm just going to paraphrase the rest of this because it is a very long story, where some of the crew actually stayed there instead of taking their chances out at sea. But eventually, after that 92 days, many people had been consumed literally, whether they died. And there was actually, how do I explain this without being insensitive? But basically, there was an agreement between three of the men. If I have that incorrect, I will fix it here up on the screen. You'll see it pop up. Where someone basically agreed that if they lost this bet, so to speak, someone would die. And then someone was shot. I believe that it was actually Pollard's nephew. And yeah, he was one of the few who I believe were eaten. I do have to point out that there were people of color aboard. And I actually learned about this story, I think I mentioned earlier, from one of my favorite YouTubers, Ask a Mortician. And she answered a really interesting question that I had about this story. And that's, man, if they were just eating all these people, how are they still starving to death? And her answer was the fact that these men were extremely lean, as you can imagine, mm-hmm. being at sea for so long. And you actually need fat for proper absorption of certain calories and nutrients. It's actually very similar to if you were in the wilds of like Northern Canada and you found snow hares. They're so lean that you can actually give yourself protein poisoning if you eat too many of them.
Mm-hmm. It's like rabbit fever. They're eating lean foods with nothing else in them. Oh God, what a sham.
Mm-hmm. But to wrap the story up again, because it is so very long, they were actually discovered. The men who survived were rescued from the boats, and they made a round trip back to the island where I mentioned those men had decided just to stay there instead of chancing the waters, and they were rescued as well. But as you can imagine, there was a lot of trauma that came from this, and many of the men were not the same people when all was said and done.
Yeah, so this reminds me of the tale of the HMS Erebus and the HMS Terror. And like, it's very similar. So they were looking for the Northwest Passage, and they went north, and they got iced in. And like, no one seems to understand that like, the waters are treacherous. They end up having to eat each other, and they ended up all dying. Like, it's another story where people go on these boats with no thought or care in the world for the worst possible situation. I think a sperm whale ramming the boat and destroying it is the worst possible situation.
Yeah, especially because they already started off, like I said, with a storm that broke part of the ship. Mm-hmm. But something that I just want to really quickly say, because I know that there are going to be people at home who are probably asking the question of, well, was anybody charged with anything for killing or consuming any of these people? And actually, no. Mm-hmm. In similar instances, it was actually kind of justified, and it was custom at sea if you were in really dire circumstances to either eat the flesh of whoever may have died or even use it as fish bait. So there was no like mass judgment that was recorded of the men who survived. Because I know that there's going to be somebody out there who's like, how do y'all just look or like cannibals back on shore, back into good old Nantucket? We might not want those folks here. But yeah, it was kind of just understood.
Well, no, I understand that completely, though, because like realistically, if you're at sea and you have to eat somebody, you have no way, especially if like an outside person looking in, if you're ever in this like a plane crash situation, if you're ever stuck there and you have to eat somebody to survive, it's not fair for the people on the outside looking in to be like, no, you shouldn't have done that, because what else were the options?
Yeah, exactly.
Like if I trust me. Sitting here now, I say I'm not going to ever eat a person if I have to. But again, if I'm starving at sea, I might make that decision.
Well, yeah, it's not even just that. But as I said before, I don't know if the men had the means to fish, but mm-hmm. other fishermen who didn't want to eat flesh would try to use it as fish bait mm-hmm. to try to get other sources of food. But as you can imagine, I don't think that would be particularly easy to catch.
No, I don't think it would. I don't think it'd be easy at all. And again, you're on these like lifeboats, they're not huge.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, it seems like a whole lot of effort, and I would just jump overboard.
Yeah. I think
no one's eaten me except for the sharks.
But yeah, there is a very condensed version I read as much verbatim as I could, but as I said, it's very long, so I didn't want to drag out the entire episode. If by any chance I incorrectly stated something, I will make sure you will see, any of you who watch my videos, I will add commentary often underneath in little titles to either correct myself or just add comedy to the show.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Do you have anything for me, Alden?
Yeah, I mean, just touching on like shipwrecks and how dangerous they can, like, dangerous the waters can be. There's tons of ship graveyards all over the world. There's tons of famous shipwrecks. So last week, as we said, we talked about ships that kind of went missing and then either reappeared or were wrecked somewhere. And sometimes these, like, sometimes it's crazy. It's like some shipwrecks just, you don't think they should. Like, entire fleets were shipwrecked. Like, there was, this is one of my favorites. So there was two Mongolian invasion fleets trying to get to Japan. And now we're sitting in 1274 and 1281. So we're, you know, way back in the past. But, and ships weren't up to being what they were, you know, today. So basically these invasion fleets to Japan, which, just so you know, a lot of times whenever someone tries to invade Japan, it doesn't go well. Right. They have to get across that water. They basically, the entire fleet wrecked. So that was like tens of thousands of people just died because they couldn't get across the straits because of storms.
Right.
And basically these entire shipwrecks were claimed to originate from Fujian in southern China, and then was discovered to be, you know, by archaeologists recently. And then in 2015, they located a Mongolian ship in a bay close to the city of Katsura near the island of Kyushu. So basically these ships, like, none of them made it. None of them really made it. And it kind of leads to think, like, at these times, you have, you know, mariners who don't really know what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's 1274, 1281. They're not doing great. Look at the Polynesians. The Polynesians sailed all over the world from like a very early period of time. I don't know, unfortunately, so you can't quote me on the time, but the Polynesians built boats and sailed. And they did it right, but then you have people who don't do it right. And it's kind of crazy when you think of, you know, you have like Spanish armadas that get wrecked. You have, you know, fleets get destroyed. The Titanic, that's a big one.
Yeah, of course.
That's gone for good now. Like, you have all these ones that you'd think they would know what they were doing, but it leads to, like, and a lot of times it's human stupidity. That's one thing we talk about, is like, we talk about a lot about fear and, you know, how it's all in the mind, and you have, like, you know, people see ghosts or demons, it can be all like demons of the mind. And at the same time, these things can lead to a lot of things like that.
Yeah.
Like with the Khan's fleet from Mongolia, it was just human greed, and he sent thousands of people to their deaths. With the Spanish Armada, it just sunk, unfortunately, because of storms. Titanic sunk, if you base off the movie, because they didn't really care. They're like, icebergs, who cares about icebergs?
Yeah, it's foggy. That was very bizarre.
Yeah, you look at King Kong, the movie King Kong. The one that came out in like 2010, I think, or somewhere
2012, somewhere around that time.
Yeah, that entire one is Jack Black wanting to get to an island, which I love. He's like the main protagonist, if you really ask me, to get to the island. And they almost get wrecked off Skull Island. And it's all because people just don't seem to care. It's all based on how, you know, our to humans, our most difficult and, like, I want to say, like, adversive, like, enemy is ourselves. Mm-hmm. Like, we cause a lot of problems for ourselves, and it's kind of crazy. It just leads to so many issues.
Yep, you're not wrong. I love that you literally went from history to making witty movie reference.
Listen, King Kong is a really good movie. It's on Netflix now. I watched it. I missed it. It's a good movie. Watch.
It's
long. It's like 3 hours, though.
Yeah, it is.
But it's pretty good.
It was a good movie.
Yeah, it was.
But speaking of, we have to talk about the Nipomaru.
Yes, actually.
This one was really cool. I found this in a list of basically the most interesting shipwrecks in the world. So I looked it up, and I'm on submerge.co.uk.
Okay.
And basically it's basically like a website where these divers actually went to see it, and there's a whole bunch of really cool images and stuff. I think once I kind of explain a little bit about what it is, I will actually share my screen so that everybody can see it. Just give me 2 seconds. My binder here. Oh, there we are. So the Nippon-Maru serves as a grim reminder of what wartime was really like. This Japanese cargo ship was built in 1936 and was sunk during Operation Hailstone when it fell to its demise by U.S. dive bombers. It was torpedoed and bombed. It's actually known as the Million Dollar Shipwreck because it was carrying so much artillery, including like machine guns, bombs, gas masks, tanks, other machinery, and all this stuff is actually still there, which is completely insane to me. It's so weird. I don't want to say that it's weird, but it's interesting, rather, how preserved you can find sunken ships at the bottom of like lakes and oceans, because you can't see it on the surface. So you just assume, oh, once it sinks down there, you know, it's gone. It's got to eventually just erode away.
Mm-hmm.
No, crazy. Give me 2 seconds. I'm going to share my screen and take you through some of these pictures. Yes, desktop one.
Okay. Woo!
Here it is. So as you can see,
you got a lot of tabs open.
The ship. That was an old wartime picture of it when she was still afloat. That looks like...
It's a tank.
It's a
tank. It's kind of crazy, too, when you think of, like, that's a howitzer, too. Holy crap.
Yeah.
How, like, these, like, the ocean takes over everything. That's one thing that we can be talked about is how, no matter what happens in, like, human history, nature always reclaims it. And it's kind of just crazy how nature reclaims and totally takes over a ship and makes it into an atoll. It makes it into a coral homeland, if you want to call it that. And that, it's just ridiculous how sometimes these things just happen.
I know. It's crazy.
Crazy. I have two if I have a chance.
Yes, you have a chance.
So just one touching on Canadian history, which is really cool. So the RMS Empress of Ireland. So I got this one from marineinsight.com, and it's kind of all these things. This was from by MI News Network in Maritime History, and this was on October 4th, 2019. So, Empress of Ireland, Canadian ocean liner, sank near the mouth of the St. Lawrence River on the 29th of May, 1914, after colliding with the Norwegian coaler SS Storstrad during thick fog, killing 1,012 people. So, like, we talk about fog and, you know, being in a boat. And again, we're not mariners. We don't go on boats often. So, for me to speak and say this, it's kind of like looking on the outside in. But normally, you would hope to assume that, you know, foghorns were either getting to be a big thing now or not a thing yet. And that's what could have caused the crash. But basically, the ship was on the way from Quebec City to Liverpool with 1,057 passengers and crew of 420. And vessel went down in one of the worst disasters in Canadian maritime history. At present, the wreck of the Empress of Ireland lies in a shallow of 130 feet of water. At several occasions after the incident, several divers have successfully recovered many valuables, including silver bars, a brass bell, and a stern telemeter from the ship. So basically, it's still very accessible, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. Like, two ships colliding in a harbor and killing, like, they didn't even get out of Quebec City, really. They were in the mouth of the St. Lawrence. And my next one is a ship graveyard, which is really cool. And this kind of talks about, we talk about conspiracy theories for a little bit. This is kind of like a conspiracy theory in itself. So it's called Bikini Atoll. So that's just by itself, it's amazing. So it's located in the Marshall Islands. The Bikini Atoll is known for the naval vessels resting in its lagoons. The Bikini Atoll was the location of the United States nuclear testing program, which saw the sinking of 90 vessels between 1946 and 1958. So we talk about, you know, all kinds of conspiracy theories, and these ships are here because it was a spot where they were testing nuclear devices. I'm fairly certain, actually, Bikini Atoll is mentioned in the first Godzilla, or at least the Marshall Islands are, because they talk about how they're testing nukes and Godzilla just shows up, which is really kind of cool. So basically, they just blasted these test sites with, like, nukes and things to see what would happen, and it ended up sinking USS Pennsylvania, USS New York, USS Saratoga, USS Arkansas, Officially designating a ship graveyard by the U.S. Navy, the Bikini Atoll is now a UNESCO World Heritage Site. So people, apparently people like researchers and scuba divers love going there. And funny enough, as I mentioned about nature coming back and taking over, so the reefs that were in this atoll were completely annihilated because of all the nuclear radiation. And now they're coming back, which is really crazy. So you give it 40 years, 50 years almost, and the coral will come back and thrive. It's not thriving, but it says it has the signs of regrowth and resurgence.
Thank goodness, because the reefs did not deserve any of that nonsense.
Yeah, they just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yes. So I think I will share my screen for this one again. Now, there's not a whole lot of information on this ship, but it is classified as the oldest sunken ship in the world, having sunk somewhere in 400 BC.
Okay. It's like a canoe.
Yeah, I'll show you. Just give me 2 seconds. I'm going to share my screen again. Yes, desktop one. Here we go. So here it is. It's a wooden ship, as you can see. And it's the world's oldest known ship that's been discovered, sitting at the bottom of the Black Sea. It's expected to have been here, as you can see, the article says, for 2,400 years.
That's insane.
And it's still there. Look at this.
Yeah, that's insane. And then I love how these things can happen. First of all, I want to mention the granny in the corner there that has her back straightened. That told me, I love these odds. She looks like the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
That's not nice.
Sorry, but that's obviously not a real person with a hunch like that. It's not. There's no way. But that's this kind of stuff is crazy because the ocean preserves and keeps things. If you look at all kinds, my favorite kind of horror movies or books take place on the ocean because there's so much going on in there. One of my favorites is The Terror, which is all about the Marianas, or I guess The Terror is all about HMS Terror and HMS Erebus. It's all about like the ocean and how scary that can be in itself. Plus, there's like a Native American, or I should say an indigenous, like Wendigo thing eating them. And then there's also like, what's the other one? The Deep, which is a really good horror book about like the Marianas Trench and how like some things under there are pretty crazy. Like there's so many cool things in the ocean, and all these crashes are just awesome.
Okay, shall we?
Okay, so we're on Quiz Grizz. We are going to start. So here we go. You want me to read this off?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're starting off. First of all, I got to close all these ads that popped up. Can you describe being lost at sea? Imagine you are refined to a tiny inflatable inflatable life raft or a small tropical island. The quiz will test your knowledge and common sense to survive these very testing odds.
Dude.
I don't think we're doing well. Okay, so you are sailing solo across the Atlantic Ocean. When your yacht hits a submerged object, you are taking on water and sinking rapidly. What do you do first? First of all, I don't own a yacht.
I was going to say, this is very presumptuous.
Yeah, I'm already in a better place. Okay, so we're sinking. We got fire off a signal flare, get the life raft and survival kit ready for deployment, jump off the boat and start swimming, or none of the above.
I'm going with get the life raft and survival kit because I assume that a survival kit would already have a signal flare in it because that would only make sense. So I could set off a signal flare from my little tiny boat.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm going with. So waiting until the last minute to figure out how to deploy your life raft and locating your survival kit to accompany you in the raft is not a smart move. Get it ready and go on then. Attend to the distress calls of any other vessels within your range. You might get lucky and get rescued immediately. So okay. Did we pick right?
Yeah, we did. It said correct.
Okay. Even though 80% of the people pick none of the above. So next, we now realize that you have to abandon the ship. You have a few minutes to take a handful of items before you're boarding the life raft. What should you take first? Waterproof lighter and candles, flashlight and extra batteries, Coca-Cola and Snickers bars, or reading books, maps, and a compass. This is tough. I'm going to go with the reading books, maps, and a compass.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty hard to figure out where you are. Actually, I changed my mind. I'm picking waterproof candles. No, I didn't get it.
I didn't get it either. What was it?
Supposedly Coca-Cola and Snickers bars.
Really?
Yeah. The long term in a survival situation, you have no idea when you will get rescued. Food or water. Coca-Cola will dehydrate you.
Yeah, it has caffeine in it.
Okay, well, that's dumb. Okay, you deploy the life raft just before watching your boat disappear underwater. What is your first thing to do before anything else? Wave your arms in the air to attract attention of other vessels. Fire a signal flare. Find the seasick tablets and take one immediately. Take a nap to conserve energy. I'm going to fire off a signal flare. No, incorrect again. Find the seasick tablets, take one immediately. I'm not seasick, though. What the? Recommends first step upon boarding a life raft is take an anti-seasick tablet, which is part of the life raft survival kit. Seasickness causes vomiting. I'm not seasick, though. You think I wouldn't be seasick if I've already been on a boat? Okay, whatever. Going to the next one. You're panicked and don't know what to do next. What would you do? I don't know what I'd do. I'm panicked. Take deep breaths and keep calm. Survey your raft for any leaks and take stock of your survival kit. Fire off a signal flare. Why is there always firing off a signal flare?
I'm not picking that
option. The Snickers
option.
Bar and soda. I don't even have the soda, so I can't. Use the life rafts or to paddle down current. We're on the ocean. Where's the current? I'm taking a deep breath.
Yeah.
Okay, we got it.
Yep.
So we did it. We're smart. We're going to the next thing. You've discovered 4 lighters, 4 water rations in the life raft emergency kit. Each liter is contained in a single sealed plastic bag. You've also 6 cans of Coca-Cola. How should you plan your hydration strategy?
This is making me
feel
stupid.
Not drink any of it for the first 24 hours, then start rationing.
No.
Drink some water immediately to replenish lost fluids from the day. Water is stored in 4 sealed plastic bags. You could get damaged and leak. Drink the water ASAP. Whether it's stored in the bags or my body, it makes no difference. That's what I'm not going to do. Drink the Coke soon before the cans can rust and burst. That would waste pressure. I'm going to drink some water immediately. What?
I'm going to go with drink the Coke soon.
No.
I was also incorrect.
We have to ration, apparently. What if I'm thirsty now? I'm not making it at sea.
Nope.
In a crisis, what would the best way to find water? Bear Grylls taught me to stick a tube at my bum and drink that. That's what I'm going to do. Capture rainwater, make a solar still, drink your urine, hey, or lick the condensation off the raft. Capture rainwater. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah.
Yeah, because rainwater is not full of salt, so we're good there. Next, you feel so thirsty, you're considering drinking some of the seawater. What will happen if you do? I will die. I'm not drinking the seawater. I will dehydrate. We got this. You and me.
Yep.
You and me, Jackie. Now you've planned the hydration strategy. What is the next survival priority? Get some food in you by eating the Snickers bar first. Try to catch a fish. Establish a watch schedule to scan for ships or the boats. Take a long nap. You need the rest after the experience. Oh, Jesus. I don't even know.
Okay, we should strategize here. We're going to pick the 2 answers that we think could possibly be right.
Okay.
So I think... Go ahead.
No, sorry. I think it's going to be... I'm really leaning on the watch schedule, I think. Okay.
That's what I was going to say. So you pick watch schedule. I'm going to pick get some food in you, eat a Snickers bar.
Okay. Ready? Here we go. Right.
1, 2, 3.
Okay, I'm good.
Okay, you're good? Okay, I got it incorrect.
Okay, we're good. So I'm sorry, Jackie and I, we got it. So I'm correct. You have to look for ships, apparently. You feel a bump under your raft. You look in the water and see a shark circling you. What do you do? Here we go. Grab them with your hands. The next time he swims past it, eat him right away. Like, pull a full golem, bring him out of the water, start eating him live. Attack him with the oar. Try to jab him in the eye or the nose. Throw one of your Snickers bars in the water so he'll lose interest in you and take the bait. None of the above. I'm going to do none of the above. I'm not going to bother the shark.
You go with none of the above. I'll go with attack him with the life raft. Or, I was correct.
Ah, Jesus. What's sharks, he eating?
Yeah.
What's he eating? No.
Sharks bump objects with their bodies to investigate. Nip its curiosity in the bud by showing him that you and your raft are not food. Jab the oar at the shark's head, aiming directly for the nose or eyes. Oh, yeah, they're really sensitive. Because sharks, fun fact, everybody thinks that they're just out to eat people, but if you prove yourself to not be worth the time or to be too much of a hassle, a shark is going to be like, fluff this. I do not have time for you and your flailing.
It's a great weight. I'm dead. You have a hand line and a single hook. You managed to capture an oceanic triggerfish using a piece of a Snickers bar as bait. I like my Snickers. What is the risk of handling this fish? Something called a triggerfish doesn't sound nice. Contains a poisonous mucus layer on their skin. Poisonous barbs protruding from the dorsal fins. They carry a Ciguatera toxin in their flesh, being bitten. I don't even know what a triggerfish is.
I don't either.
They have poisonous barbs. I'm going with poisonous barbs.
Okay, I will go with the Ciguatera toxin.
Well, we're both wrong.
Shoot.
Being bitten. Like, they have like a
we took
knife.
It too technically.
We did.
Okay, let's keep going.
Okay, well, we're still alive so far. What are the risk of what are you at risk of if you eat too much fish without drinking enough water? Hypothermia, dehydration, tularemia, or kidney failure? I'm going with kidney failure. What are you thinking?
I'm just going to go with dehydration.
Okay.
I don't think it's correct, but I'm just going.
You were right.
Oh, I was right.
Basically.
Oh, it was like we were talking before. Protein requires a long time to digest, and your body actually uses water to help you process that food. That's why a lot of us wake up thirsty in the morning.
So far, I'm dying. I'm at 45% correct.
Same.
What part of the fish do you want to avoid eating? The brain, the eyes, the stomach and the intestines, or the skin?
I'm gonna
The
go with.
skin.
I'll go with stomach and intestines.
Oh, you were right. I was wrong. I'm really dead.
Oh, yeah, no, I was right. The digestive organs of any animals, such as the stomach and intestines, should be avoided. These contain bacteria.
I'm gonna die at sea.
Me too. It's okay.
Okay, you spot on a small tropical island and the wind is blowing you straight to it. What is your first steps after making landfall? You are on land, which means water must be nearby. Nope. Survey the surroundings for any signs of people, preferably at a high point. Yes. Get a fire going to warm up or make a shelter. I'm gonna go with looking for people, because
Yeah,
finding the high point's always smart.
right. I'm gonna go with get a fire going just because every survival game has told me that that's a priority. I blame the forest. I'm incorrect.
Well, apparently I'm correct. So getting rescued is a high priority, even though a fire would, if you had a fire on a random island, people are going to see you. The island's small with no human inhabitants. Bummer. What would the best type of emergency signal to alert passing aircrafts be? Make three signal fires on the beaches and green leaves to create lots of smoke. Draw the letters SOS on the beach sand, focusing on size and contrast. Fire off a signal flare, or all of the above.
All of the above?
You go all of the above. I'm going to go with signal fires.
Okay.
I was incorrect. Yeah. Well, I'm really dead now.
It's
Shoot.
okay. I'm only at 50%, dude. I'm pretty sure I'm dead too.
Okay, so signs are taken care of. Now you are pretty dehydrated and really hungry. What is the best choice for rehydration? Limpets and periwinkles are all over the rocks and easy pickings, very high in protein. Crab soup, the beach has loads of ghost crabs and they're pretty easy to catch. Coconuts or edible leafy greens. I'm going coconuts. Go
Crab
coconuts. Go coconuts. Go coconuts.
soup. I'm
Go
in.
coconuts.
Yep, not much beats coconuts for survival food.
So I'm living off coconuts on this island.
I mean,
Coconuts are very
grams.
healthy. However, drinking too many is a bad idea. Why? Coconut water can cause bloating, can result in too much potassium in the body. Consuming high amounts of coconut water can cause diarrhea, or all of the above. Let's both go all of the above. Okay,
Okay,
Jackie,
okay,
you
okay.
ready? We were
Incorrect!
both wrong.
I
Jesus.
was gonna say diarrhea. That's it. It'll
Yeah.
make you poop.
It could make you bloat. That could be a thing.
I know, but if you think about it, is bloating really an issue when you're alone on an island or not posting bikini pictures for Instagram?
I think so.
Okay,
You are now hydrated and fed, but it's getting dark quickly. Shelter is your priority. What's your best choice? Go searching for a cave, use the life raft, cut off the fronds of a coconut palm and use them to make an A-frame. Sleep under a coconut tree. The broad leaves provide good shelter and no need to waste calories. I'm going to say use the raft.
and then I'll go with C, cut off the fronds of the coconut palm.
Hey, got it. Turn the life raft upside down. Great to provide shelter. I'm pretty sure under the coconut tree is a bad idea because you get hit in the head by a coconut and you're just dead. You never know. Sun is setting and the sand flies are eating you alive. How do you keep them away? Jump into the ocean once every hour. This will also soothe the bites. Rub coconut water on your skin. Get a fire going. Keep dead still. Bugs attract the movement. No, they're not. Attract the heat and the smell. I'm gonna go with coconut water. I don't feel like it's a good one, but I'm gonna go with it.
Jump into the ocean? No.
I was
Yeah,
wrong.
no, it was
Fire?
flames.
Yeah, flames. Bugs scared of flames. Come on, monkey brain, you should know this. God.
It's because we're overthinking, that's the problem.
We are. In the early hours of the morning, you notice lights out at sea. It must be a ship. What do you do? Well, I haven't fired off the signal flare yet because we kept it, so we're good. Best move is to swim out to the boat as it does not look to be that far away. Terrible idea. Make yourself visible and wave your hands back and forth. Shout or whistle loudly so they can hear you. It's a boat, they can't hear you.
Signal flare.
Yeah. Fire off the parachute flare from your life raft. Okay, I'm going with signal flare. Or the three signal fires. Signal flare. Yeah, signal flare. Whew, got it. Okay, so it's changed direction. It's heading towards the island. It is much closer now. What do you do? Try to make yourself as visible as possible. Loudly shout or whistle so they can hear you. Set the life raft on fire. Thermal will give off black smoke, making it easier to see you. Light your handheld signal flare and wave it back and forth. Use the life raft's signal mirror. To alert them to your location. I don't know how to alert them. So, like, am I going to blind them with my mirror? I'm going to go with the signal flare.
Yeah, same.
Oh my God, we got it right, Jackie.
We're still gonna die.
Oh my God, yeah, I'm very dead. And let's see, show me my results. I'm not gonna lie, I'm gonna skip that. I'm dead. I got 10 out of 20. That's not bad.
Oh, I've got an F.
You got an F? I didn't pass, so I'm just dead. So good job, Jackie. You survived, but I
No,
died.
I didn't. It said I didn't pass either. I got an F. Did not pass.
Oh,
9 of
oops.
20.
What's
I'm
my bad?
dead.
Yeah, we're both
So
dead.
dead.
We're crab food.
Getting pulled away by crabs.
That's okay. So just before we're done for the day, that's why I saw this video yesterday talking about Amelia Earhart and how one of the theories they think is that she fell asleep under a on this island and coconut crabs ripped her apart. Now, one of the, I thought like what the main theory is that she died of dehydration and just perished, and the coconut crabs ate her afterwards. But can you imagine being
Right.
torn apart by coconut crabs while you're alive?
That's a rough way to
Coconut
go.
crabs are like 3 feet long. They're like a meter.
That's a
Yeah.
lot.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, Eldenaken? We had a bumpy start to this, just as a ship would out at sea.
Yeah, ho ho.
But thank you so much for being here again, and thank you all so much for watching. This was our very eloquently put episode on sunken ships and whether or not Eldon and I would survive such similar scenarios, which, as you can tell, we wouldn't.
I think if we were on the boat together, we got it.
Oh,
If
yeah,
we didn't
no.
get it, we would have survived.
We would have been fine.
Yeah. So I think number one is don't buy a yacht and don't sail alone. That's it. That's we wouldn't have been in the situation if we didn't own a yacht and if we didn't sail alone.
Exactly. Just
So.
partners in crime till the day we die, and we'll just avoid death together.
Yeah, I like it.
It's
Okay.
a solid
It's a
plan.
solid plan.
All
All
right, so I apologize, by the way. I'm late saying this, but my chair squeaks.
I didn't hear it, so you're good.
Great.
Yeah.
So thank you, everybody, so much for watching. We will be back again within about another week or so. I haven't decided what we'll be touching on yet, but the one thing that I can promise you is that it'll be hectic, it will be messy, spooky, and me and Eldon will be doing it together as we always do.
I like it. Sounds good.
Okay, make sure that you follow Riot Radio on all of their social media platforms at DCSI Riot Radio. You can find these podcasts pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts. So make sure that you go through all of them. I know that we're on Anchor, and you can also find us on Ustream. And if you just search Riot Radio, The Grave Hour in Google, you'll find them.
Fantastic.
All right, see you later,
See ya.
everybody. Bye.